But on the other hand, can Dido be considered blameworthy? Her passion is imposed upon her externally by Venus, and then more so in book four by Venus acting in concert with Juno. Now, to some extent, in Greco-Roman culture, in a culture that believes in gods who personify sexual passion and such things, to some extent, anyone who's struck with an inappropriate sexual passion could say Aphrodite or Venus made me do it. To some extent, anyone could say my passion was imposed upon me by Venus. That's true. But Virgil makes it so explicitly clear that Venus forces Dido to feel this passion, that that's something that needs to be taken into account, that this is not a matter of Dido waking up one day and saying, I think I'll break my vow now, I'm tired of living as a celibate. Rather, it's a matter of Venus forcing her to feel passion for Aeneas. Furthermore, Anna's arguments should be given some weight. Dido does need a consort, and a queen should produce an heir. It is a good thing for Carthage, or it would be a good thing for Carthage, if Dido married and produced an heir. She's not a private citizen. Maybe she shouldn't have had the right to make that vow not to remarry in the first place. And speaking of that vow, yes, she's broken her vow, but remarrying is not a crime. And the penalty she pays is out of all proportion to the seriousness of her fault in breaking her vow to Sichaeus. So, critics can see Dido as blameworthy, critics can see Dido as innocent. What about Aeneas? Is he justified in his very cold response to her? Just to recap that a little bit, he says that he never even hinted at marriage with her. I never held the wedding torches as a husband, he says. He told her of his destiny to go to Italy when he narrated his story to her in books 2 and 3. Over and over again in books 2 and 3, he stresses that he is fated to found a new people in Italy. Therefore, it could be said she should have known all along that there was no way he was going to stay permanently in Carthage. She should have realized that from the very beginning. As he tells her, and as Virgil tells us, he has not just suddenly decided on his own accord to leave. Mercury reminded him of his destiny and his duty. Mercury sent by Jupiter. This is not Aeneas's own idea. And Aeneas's cold, controlled demeanor, the careful way he speaks to Dido without showing any passion or any reciprocal emotion, this can be read as his reassertion of pietas, of his duty to everyone, to Ascanius, his heir, to the people he's supposed to lead, to the descendants he's supposed to have. This self-control can be seen as the reassertion of pietas over furor. Furor now not in the sense of rage, but in the sense of passion, of sexual passion. Aeneas has been misled by his passion, has forgotten his destiny because of passion. His very carefully controlled, unemotional speech to Dido can be seen as the moment at which he reasserts his pietas over his passion. Now, I think actually there are two separate issues which we need to distinguish in thinking about Book 4. Our view of Aeneas and Dido's view of Aeneas, with the benefit of Virgil's commentary, and with our benefit as readers who know that Rome was indeed founded, so Aeneas did in fact have to get there as its ancestor, with the hindsight that makes the workings of fate pellucidly clear, we can perhaps see Aeneas too as pitiable. He's acting against his own will and perhaps even against his own inclinations. Here's one of the primary places where we see that tension between the private Aeneas and the public Aeneas that I talked about in a previous lecture, where what his heart wants to do is not what his pietas allows him to do. Virgil tells us that Aeneas wanted to comfort Dido, that he pitied her and he wanted to comfort her, but nevertheless carried out the god's commands. And in fact, depending on how one interprets a very ambiguous line, Aeneas perhaps even weeps for Dido. Virgil tells us that Dido at one point sends her sister Anna to plead with Aeneas, to ask him if he won't stay, at least will he stay for a little while, will he delay his departure to give Dido time to get used to the idea. And Virgil says that Aeneas is like an oak tree assailed by storm winds. He holds out against all these pleas, and here are the ambiguous lines. He is battered on this side and on that by assiduous words. He feels care in his mighty chest, and yet his mind cannot be moved. The tears fall useless.